laws by the Labour government for targeting Israeli weapons manufacturing sites on UK soil is on many people's mind.
They have managed to mute all resistance all over Europe, and now if you are pro-Palestinian, you are a criminal, or you are. It's like we are losing our democracy here. It's very important to be here today, because this is one step towards fascism, which is developing everywhere.
Everyone knows it's a trap.
There's also sympathy for the six of the 24 activists jailed by the British government for trying to stop those weapons destined for the Israeli regime.
And I think in any other situation, we would hear about these things. You know, we would hear about hunger strikes if they were connected to Ukraine, maybe, or to Sudan or Congo. There's something about Palestine which means they don't even get their voices heard through the people who are trying to be allies with them here, because they're censored through.
Nearly 50 years ago, the United Nations named today the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, marking Resolution 181 advocating for the partition of Palestine into two states.
And yet another national demonstration terminates outside the halls of power, with the thousands who have gathered here saying they're here to assert that ordinary people in Britain refuse to be silent while their government continues to support a regime that is accused of genocide. Cypher is up, London.
Long live Palestine!
Supporters of Palestine in South Korea joined International Day of Action on Saturday to protest Israel's genocide in Gaza and the West Bank, and to draw attention to the one-sided peace plan of U.S. President Donald Trump.
The closest this peace proposal gets to an acknowledgement of the statehood of Palestine is in small text at the end, stating, "Only after the conditions have been carried out, there may finally be a pathway to Palestinian self-determination," leaving the freedom of Palestinians not up to their own will, but rather once again in the hands of Israel and the imperialist United States.
The death toll of Palestinians killed by Israel reaches near 70,000 people after 2 years. We're reminded to look past the data.
It's been so long since the current genocide started, and we just see numbers and numbers and numbers, and we forget that these are individuals and these are people and they have families, and we need to remember that, and we need to remember the suffering of other people across the world and how we need to stand up for all of them.
As supporters of Palestine here have emphasized, responsibility for Israel's genocide is widely shared. South Korea continues to deepen ties with Israel, including hosting the Israeli ambassador for public events and expanding military cooperation, including the provision of components for Israeli fighter jets that are still bombing Gaza. Under the cover of a so-called ceasefire, Israel's killed hundreds of Palestinians and has again widened the conflict with deadly bombings of Lebanon and Syria. While now most countries have shifted to support Palestine, more active policies are needed.
Countries need to impose more sanctions, and they need to put more pressure on the country that is aiding Israel. Being the U.S.
Recent winter rains have destroyed thousands of displaced Palestinians' tents. The U.N. demands Israel allow Palestinians to receive much-needed humanitarian and food aid. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Venezuela has been the subject of intense media attention in recent months as the United States doubles down on its pressure aimed at overthrowing the government in Caracas. In the eastern state of Anzoátegui, an assembly of local leadership meets as part of a process to fortify the United Socialist Party, the PSUV, from the grassroots level.
What the Venezuelans want is peace, prosperity, and we have our own democratic system. We have elections. We are even electing at this moment communities and popular power all over the country.
Venezuela held another election on Sunday to vote on local projects at the communal level, which will be funded by the state. And while the spectacle continues on social media, daily routines seem unaffected.
Things are happening. People are going to the beaches. People are going to party. People are working, are studying. But we are also getting ready for any scenario. If the imperialism of the USA tries to attack Venezuela, we'll know how to answer, and we will prevail. Venezuelans, the only thing we want is to be respected, and for the world and for the great powers to respect our sovereignty, to respect our people and our self-determination.
Throughout the country, daily life continues for Venezuelans against the backdrop of the incessant campaign of aggression leveled by the United States against the country as the massive military buildup escalates in the Caribbean Sea.
Governor of Anzoátegui Luis José Mercado says while calm reigns, Venezuelans are prepared to defend their nation.
In our state of Anzoátegui, which is part of the Caribbean coastal region of our country, we have entered a period of permanent mobilization. What we have done for these past 3 months or more is carry out intense activity involving military, police, and popular mobilizations. Each of our 205 community circuits has an organization with militia units that have been mobilizing, holding night marches and meetings, conducting training exercises, and carrying out military-style preparations. In Venezuela, the majority of us, the women and men of this nation, are absolutely determined to preserve our independence and our sovereignty.
Venezuela is a country at peace, advancing in its various transformative projects, strengthening its economy in the face of the economic blockade, and guarding its sovereignty. Camila Escalante, Anzoátegui.
The Italian capital, Rome, has hosted an event dubbed A Journey into Persian Cuisine, organized by the Iranian Institute of Culture in collaboration with the Italian National Hoteliers Association Federalberghi and the Betoia Hotel Group. The initiative aimed at presenting Iran's rich gastronomic heritage and diverse regional influences. Italy, like Iran, places utmost importance on culinary traditions.
Iranian food is one of the most important food systems in the world, in diversity and health. And one of the most important our obligation is exchange these food systems and gastronomy between Italy and Iran.
Gastronomy embodies the culture of hospitality and acceptance. Everybody knows how culinary traditions are important for Italy. The same applies to Iran, where I have been kindly welcomed a few years ago.
This journey into Persian cuisine is an initiative aimed at promoting intercultural dialogue through the universal language of food. Participants say it offered them an experience that engages all the senses and opens a window onto an ancient civilization. From savory stews like Rome Sabzi and Reime Bademjoun to aromatic rice dishes such as Chelo Chebab Kubide, participants had the opportunity to discover a wide range of Iranian flavors, textures, and aromas.
The food that I like the most is the biryani labu. I love beetroot and yogurt mixed together. It tasted delicious.
The food we had today was excellent. I felt welcome and as if I was in my own home.
Now I have a crazy urge to visit Iran. Flavors were amazing. The food wasn't even too spicy. What I loved the most was the contrast of flavors in every bite.
It's called gastrodiplomacy, and it is a form of cultural diplomacy that uses food as a tool to stimulate intercultural dialogue and strengthen international relations. During the event, speakers all agreed, through the universal language of food, it is possible to better understand the other. Max Civili, Rome.
The Venezuelan embassy in Tehran marking more than a century of Bolivarian military aviation, a force that Caracas describes as revolutionary, people-centered, and central to defending the nation's independence. This year's celebration also commemorates the 33rd year since the November 1992 civic military uprising, an event that Venezuelans regard as a rebirth of their modern air force and a turning point in their political history.
A la aviación militar bolivariana. We mark 105 years of our Bolivarian military aviation. And since President Chavez established our defense doctrine in 1999, we remain fully prepared to protect the country. As you know, since August, the United States has issued threats. And for more than 17 weeks, their warships have stayed deployed. President Maduro has ordered military drills. And at the same time, we face pressure on many fronts.
More than 30 military attachés from foreign embassies in Tehran attended the ceremony, an expression of solidarity amid ongoing external pressures on Venezuela. During the opening remarks, the Venezuelan ambassador addressed what he called continuous threats and coercive measures from the United States and attempts to undermine Venezuelan sovereignty under the pretext of fighting narco-trafficking.
We are fully prepared under the current circumstances. All our armed forces stand ready and follow the commander-in-chief, our president. All military commanders maintain unity and discipline, and the solidarity we see today in Venezuela is exemplary. We are prepared to defend our country and the peace of our republic.
Iranian officials at the event praise Venezuela's resilience and its alignment with Tehran's own stance of strategic independence.
I can say that Iran and Venezuela's relations are strategic because of the high-level officials of Iran, I mean the president of the Venezuela and our supreme leader. They have this very high-level will to have strategic relationships. It's because of our, our beliefs about the resistance and resilience of against the imperialists and arrogant people and arrogant governments.
For Caracas, the 105th-year milestone is more than an anniversary. It is a message of continuity, resistance, and commitment to their national identity.
Iran and Venezuela may be oceans apart, but they are close in their shared fight against imperialism. And on this anniversary, Venezuela is also vowing to keep alive Simon Bolivar's legacy. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
This is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a televised address to the Iranian people on September 23, 2025. Now, the U.S., came and bombed Iranian enrichment facilities in this and that place. The point is that this is a science, and science cannot be destroyed. Science cannot be eliminated by bombs, threats, and such things. It exists. As I said, and I'll repeat it, we have tens of distinguished, skilled scientists and professors, hundreds of students, and thousands of trained people working on various nuclear applications. For example, I didn't mention medical treatments when listing nuclear applications, but it is one of the most important areas where nuclear enrichment is used. A large number of people are working in various fields of medical treatment. The same is true for the agricultural and industrial sectors, as well as many other areas where people are working and putting in effort. Of course, during these past few decades, when we have been carrying out this work in our country, the pressures on us, on Iran, on our country's officials, and on our administrations have been immense. They wanted Iran to abandon this work as a result of these pressures. But we didn't and won't surrender. We did not and will not succumb to pressure on this issue, nor on any other issue. And now this guy, the American side, has dug his heels in, insisting that Iran mustn't have enrichment. Now others, the previous administrations, used to say that we shouldn't have high-level enrichment, or that we shouldn't keep the products of enrichment in the country. They used to say these things, which we didn't accept. But this one now says, don't have enrichment whatsoever, absolutely no enrichment. What does this mean? It means that this great achievement, one for which our country has worked so hard, gone to great costs, and endured so many difficulties, should be thrown away and destroyed. That's what having no enrichment means. Obviously, a nation with a strong sense of honor, like the Iranian nation, will slap anyone who suggests such a thing and refuses to accept it. So, this is what I wanted to say regarding enrichment. As for the next matter, which is the third topic, in the statements of political figures, the issue of negotiating with the U.S. is frequently raised. Well, there are differing views on this. As I have said, some consider it beneficial and necessary, some believe it's harmful, and others have more moderate opinions. Opinions vary. I wish to communicate to our dear nation what I have understood, seen, felt, and experienced over these many years.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you.
Spanish Radio.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome everyone to this episode of Spotlight. On the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, the streets of the global capitals are filled not just with solidarity, but with a fierce indictment. People worldwide are rising to condemn their own government's complicity in the brutal reality, while diplomats and the architects of Trump's so-called peace plan proclaim progress. The facts on the ground tell a different story. A story of a relentless genocide in Gaza, a story of illegal expansion and summary executions in the occupied West Bank, a story of a people being systematically erased, all under the watchful eyes of an international community that claims all is going well. Tonight, we cut through the false narrative. We stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people by speaking the truth to power and demanding to know how long will this atrocity be allowed to continue. To analyze and discuss this reality, we are joined by Mr. Mick Napier, co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign from Glasgow. And Mr. Ali Hamiyeh, political analyst and military expert, joining us from South Lebanon. Well, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both for joining us in this episode of Spotlight, a very important day. November the 29th has yet again come upon us. The solidarity of Palestine, however, the genocide continues. The occupation continues. Mr. Napier, I would like to go ahead and start off with you with these global protests. Let's go ahead and start off. What does the term solidarity actually truly mean when governments of the West continue to arm and fund this Israeli war machine?
Well, solidarity means what it meant for me as a young man with the Vietnam Solidarity Movement worldwide, which was successful in defeating American militarism. And solidarity meant that people in the imperial countries, many of them understood that the state that was carrying out a genocide in Vietnam or Palestine is also the enemy of many people in that country. That we don't stand on the sidelines and applaud. We see ourselves as an extension to the Palestinian struggle for freedom. And we see our fate and our future tied to that struggle. Because a state that can be actively involved in the prosecution of a genocide, that can commit which can actively support the crimes that we have seen over many decades, but very dramatically over the last 2 years, that state is the enemy of most of its citizens as well. Because this state has actively promoted the genocide. The British Air Force has flown over Gaza more than 500 times, supplying intelligence to the killers on the ground, and the minister responsible boasting about it. So the genocide is abundantly clear, and unlike genocides before, is really undeniable. But the complicity of our government, which in past genocides has been concealed, has been hidden, is very, very clear. So, for example, many of your readers might not even know that the British government and the Americans supported the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, that genocidal government. But virtually nobody knows about that today. But millions and millions, maybe billions of people know that Britain and America and the EU have been complicit in this particular genocide. So to answer your question very quickly, solidarity is understanding that the enemy of the people of Gaza is our enemy as well, and that we have no choice but to try to join in that fight in every way that we can, because if they succeed, it becomes a dark world for everybody.
Well, exactly. Mr. Napier, you mentioned something very important, and I'm going to bring that over to Mr. Ali Hamia. Thank you very much for your patience, Doctor. When it comes to what Mr. Napier mentioned about there's even genocides that have been erased, no one even virtually knows about them because how good they've been covered by the U.S. and their allies. In this case, how effective can these international solidarity movements that we have specifically seen today, as they've been proclaimed as the biggest seen yet, be when these political establishments in the U.S., in Europe, and of course their own allies remain so deeply entrenched in, specifically now that we're speaking about Gaza, their support for the Zionist regime?
Well, let's say that the Western Hemisphere, and especially United States, and exactly the Israeli entity, are very good in playing the role of the victim at all time while they are the executioner. And also they are very good playing at the media whenever they want to put something on the surface or underground. Let's see example, Sudan, it's still the same going on Sudan for years. And now they just take it out of the sleeve and they put it on the table and everybody is talking about Sudan. So they are very good at when they want to talk about a genocide or talking about nothing is happening or just bury it underground. Let's see what's going on now. We see the people are with the solidarity standing with the Palestinian people. The governments are acting complicity with the Israeli entity. The people are acting also to save the humanity. I'm talking in general. But the governments are killing the humanity. And especially when we are talking about Gaza. Gaza is the most certified genocide massacre committed by the Israeli entity for now. Since the Holocaust, what's so called, nothing is in our hand, but we believed it because we stand by people that being killed and burned in Germany, and we have no evidence, solid evidence of the numbers that been killed. Now we are talking about Gaza in front of all global media and in front of all the people in the world being killed and being genocide and ethnic cleansing. And we can see that people are in one place, the governments are in other places. So who will be more effective at the end? I think the media will play the biggest role to just put the spotlight on what's going on in Gaza, what's going on around the world, what's the government of United States and the Israelis. And also, from time to time, you can see big role of United Kingdom and Germany around the world. But who can continue, who can consider and win the war of media. I think this is the best way now to put on the surface the war on media and the war for the humanity in Gaza. In this case, we have to be with the solidarity of the people standing with the Palestinian now.
Well, exactly, Mr. Hamia. And as we mentioned at the beginning in our intro, that we are laying out the complete truth, this false narrative. With that, you brought up something very important, that who's going to be stopping this as we see it's continuing. And let's go ahead and remind our viewers that with Mr. Napier, just over a month ago in Egypt, I mean, we saw these leaders, top leaders of these nations around the world gather with Trump, sign the so-called peace plan. And at that specific moment, many people had a sparkle of hope that, okay, maybe this can actually make a difference. Since then, these executors of Trump's so-called peace plan insist this is still working. I mean, do they not open their phones? Do they not see the media? Do they not see the images, as Mr. Hamia had mentioned? Do they not watch the same horrific scenes? Listen to these heartbreaking stories as we do. We have the acceleration of settlements in the occupied West Bank, where people are literally being kicked out of their homes, being beaten. And if they refuse their homes that they've had for generations, they are killed. And of course, let's not forget about this continuation of genocide in Gaza. Sewage is flooding the tents. What exactly is this term working mean for these people?
I think it means that Israel is succeeding in killing a large number of Palestinians. Still, that's what it means. We're witnessing something akin to what we thought, or many people thought, was consigned to the history books with the great anti-colonial struggles of the 60s and 70s, where many countries in Africa and Asia and Latin America became independent. And it was thought that that was the end of colonialism, because colonialism meant that Britain or France or Germany or America could go anywhere in the world where they had superior means of violence and take what they wanted. They could pillage, rob, exploit, kill, and even exterminate in many cases. Very few of your readers will know that Winston Churchill was responsible for killing 3 million people in Bengal in 1943-44, when there was plenty of food, but they arranged a famine. So that was the crimes of colonialism, and brown-skinned people were inferior and did not have the same rights as white people or their allies. In those days, Britain could invade countries because, quote unquote, we were Christians and they were not. That gave the European countries the right to exterminate and kill. That they don't talk like that anymore, except for Trump. But now it's, we have democracy, whatever that is, and they don't, whatever that is. And therefore, we have the right to bomb and kill and invade. I mean, it's not in the Middle East, but we're watching the news headlines today as Trump begins to invade Venezuela, just like a 19th and early 20th century colonial power. No excuse, no reason other than the thinnest one. And he's using aircraft carriers and will use bombers to defeat that government. It is open banditry. We are watching the wheel of progress run in reverse. And Gaza is simply the most extreme example of that. That ability, that readiness to exterminate people who sit on land that somebody wants. Somebody wants Venezuela's oil. Somebody wants the land surface of Palestine. Those who stand in their way have no rights. And the people who gathered in Cairo were simply Mr. Sykes and Monsieur Picot from the early 20th century, who divided up the Middle East, who drew the borders without any reference to the local people. Balfour said, we don't take into account the opinions of the local people. They're not important. So this racism is so rampant and so extreme that the people of Gaza had no right to determine their own future. That was to be done by America and its allies and servants and clones. So it's a very grim situation, but we see rising anger. Thousands of people have been arrested and charged in Britain with terrorism. I myself have been charged with terrorism and face 14 years in prison for opposing the genocide. In Italy recently, we saw the dockers refuse to move Israeli materials and riots and street fighting in support of the Palestinian people against the Meloni pro-Israel regime. So we see a rising anger. It's certainly rising. And there's nothing strange about that. The barbarity of Israel, although it's far too slow, nonetheless, it's eating away at stability in the Western countries.
Well, exactly, Mr. Napier, if you don't mind me cutting you off, I do want to fit in some more questions as our time is running out. Mr. Hami and Mr. Napier spoke about what the Zionist regime has committed, what the U.S. has backed it with, its impunity, and, of course, the continued silence of the international community. And he did speak about this agreement in Cairo. With the situation, we've seen, of course, that we're still in phase one, and we still see the Hamas fighters under fire, gunfire, still trying to search for the remains of the Zionist captives. And again, the phase one had, just to remind our audience and viewers, they were supposed to return the remains of the captives within 72 hours, which Hamas at the moment mentioned. This is definitely something nearly impossible because of the continued mass of rubble. And again, Hamas continues, wants to do this, despite all of it, upholding their commitment to this so-called peace plan so they can try to get some kind of aid, the stop of attacks, anything to help the Palestinian people. However, on the other side, just one of the examples that we've seen recently on from Zionists on TV, we had a man on Zionist on live television on a Hebrew media channel actually making inhumane comments of a mother, Palestinian mother, who had lost her child, the death of her child, and he made a comment saying she's probably the one that ate up all his food as he died of starvation. I mean, this again, these ridiculous comments are what has let this regime gain the so-called selective application of international law. Mr. Hamia, with your experience with being there in another axis of resistance in Lebanon, axis of resistance in general, what is it that makes Hamas and the resistance uphold their side of these ceasefires, uphold their commitment, knowing what the other side is going to do?
Well, we all know that Israel cannot be trusted. The United States is always creating some new annexes to delete all agreements agreed upon. And it's in front of us, 1701, UN resolution, 10,000 violation by Israel, none by Lebanon, and still the American putting pressure on Lebanon, not on Israel. And also the peace plan that we are talking about that been declared on Sharm el-Sheikh by Donald Trump, we all knew that only the first two or three items or articles out of the 20 points will be implemented. Because we know that the Israelis will directly will go up and say we will not continue on such agreement. It's like a contradiction within Israel will be coming out, because we have to continue what we started. So even though there is agreements, they will not do it. They will not implement such agreements on Gaza, especially on Gaza and Lebanon. So what's like briefly complicity against the Palestinian, supporting the Israeli entity just to continue what started. They told Israel just agree on the 20 points plan and then do whatever you want as soon as you receive all your hostages or your POWs from the Palestinian, then do whatever you want to do. And that's what they are doing. And exactly they are doing in Lebanon. We see that they call it the blue line in Lebanon, they call it yellow line in Gaza. They call it like exchange POWs in between Lebanon and Israel, and nothing is happening. And also with Gaza now, it's the Hamas is implementing all what been agreed upon, the Israeli not. I think that we are lost between the George W. Bush roadmap and the Trump peace plan. All what we hear is only saying and claiming of being with the peace plan, but no. I think now we are in different stage. Israel, at the beginning, they were calling with the Arabs land against peace, then peace against peace, now agreements against peace. And this agreement should be under the wing of the Abraham Accord.
Yes, well, Mr. Hami, as you're mentioning, so basically what we're seeing, anything that comes from the U.S. or the Zionist entity, it's the same agreement, just reworded. Technical terms have been perhaps changed, but it's the same thing that we've been seeing. And in response, the same reaction by the Zionist entity and its Western allies. Let's go ahead and get in a few more questions before we run out. Mr. Napier, let's go ahead and focus just a moment on the situation that occupied West Bank, because this is basically the world's attentions on Gaza, on Sudan, on other parts. The IDF, these settlers are carrying out what can only be described as summary executions there in the West Bank. Is this a deliberate strategy to shatter any remaining Palestinian social structure, in your opinion?
Yes, it is part of a long-term plan which accelerated over the last 2 years to drive all Palestinians out of Palestine and to replace them with Zionist Jews from around the world, to hold on to the land that was stolen from the Palestinians, which, by the way, this land in international law remains the property of the original Palestinian owners. But so to hold on to that land, to drive out the owners, the native people, the Palestinians, it's very clear. Look, in science, if you have a simple theory which explains everything, this is like heaven. In this hellish situation in Palestine, a simple theory explains everything. Israel wants Palestine without Palestinians. In order to achieve that, they have to use massive violence, because you cannot charm the Palestinians into leaving. You cannot persuade them to leave. This is their land and they want to hold on to it. Therefore, great violence, ingenious violence, barbaric violence is absolutely a central part of the Zionist plan. And it has to be. It was against the black people in Australia. It was against the native people in North America. It was against the native people of Argentina. The colonists who moved in with their families began to exterminate them. That's what's happening. That everything else is just commentary. The only thing which can stop this is resistance across the entire region of West Asia and around the world by solidarity movements. We can contribute, to answer your first question, we can contribute through solidarity. That is by fighting on behalf of the Palestinian people against their common enemies by an amount that we can never know. We can reduce the enormous price of their freedom. Palestine will be free, but we can lower the cost of that.
Well, Mr. Napier, as you're saying, we can contribute to this. We do have around a little over a minute during this episode, and I would like if you could both kindly answer this question around 30 seconds. In a quick message to our audience, in the face of this ongoing genocide, what does a meaningful solidarity demand of us depend beyond protests? I mean, how can these people who are on the streets, as we saw today, in capitals around the world, force their governments to end their complicity and stop the slaughter now, not tomorrow, but today? Mr. Napier, I'm going to start off with you, please.
The same way that solidarity activity has managed to close down arms companies that were supplying Israel, has forced the Scottish government against its will to recognize the genocide and to support BDS. This is the way forward. And if we can learn from Italy in the last few weeks, that's the way forward to support the liberation of Palestine.
And Mr. Hamia, your answer to this question, please.
Yes, we should, as activists in the solidarity with the Palestinian people, to say that most of the governments around the world, and especially the United States and the Israeli government, to show that they are lying by declaring peace for the Palestinian cause and two states solution. And they are acting at the same time genocide against the Palestinians. So declaring peace and acting genocide against the Palestinian will not work. And we should work hard to continue in expose such lies to the media.
Well, with that, I'd like to thank both of you gentlemen for joining us during this episode of Spotlight. Mr. Mick Napier, co-founder of the Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, they're joining us from Glasgow. And, of course, as always, Mr. Ali Hamidi, political analyst and military expert, joining us from southern Lebanon. Pleasure to have you both with us. Well, until next time, goodbye.
You kill in the name of freedom. You kill in the name of democracy. You kill in the name of God. But not in my name will you kill. Is it not enough what you've done with all the bloodshed you've caused? Yet your greed drives you on. In your brutal race for acquisition, no land is left untouched, driven by a vile ambition to have the whole world in your clutch. Every single new addition to your slave colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from, this itching desire for prime position to have all under your feet. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you lie. Against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my peaceful faith and revelation, I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you pray. Not in my name will you dare to speak again. Not in our name.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.par.